This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Racism still boils beneath the surface of American society. And Lisa Graves, Executive Director at the Center for Media and Democracy and PR Watch, is with us to take a look at Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's peculiar and rather crude policy of kicking the poor when they're down. Now, first, this from the National Weather Service. Mostly cloudy today, highs around 51, calm winds. Tonight, overcast, areas of fog and a low around 40 for tomorrow. More fog to start things out with, overcast skies, which may gradually become sunny. Highs near 56. And Friday night, we could see a bit of rain returning, otherwise increasing clouds with a low around 42. The alternative forecast holding pretty much steady from yesterday. The waxing crescent leaf moon in Pisces is 3 days old. And again, the advice across the board is leafy flowering plants, which means sprouting seeds on probably on the kitchen drain board or in a greenhouse. And that's it for both the alternative and the conventional report. Moving straight into the stories from around Cascadia, which we want to touch on first, before we go to speak with Lisa Graves, and also we're going to be speaking with Travis Ghosh on the tragedy of Chris Dorner, the policeman in Los Angeles who had in fact been persecuted, lost his job, and pointed the finger at racism. Of course, no one joined him in that not too surprising revelation, and we have the predictable results. It's more of a tragedy presented to the American public as another spectacle. More than 300 supporters and opponents of educational equity were in Salem, attending a public hearing on a bill that would grant state tuition rates for in-state tuition rates for people who are in the country without what is considered proper documentation, though nonetheless have participated in the life of the culture, attended high school, and now would simply like to be treated fairly when they approach the task of getting into a university. Opponents of the educational equity law are whining about the at the meeting that they weren't given equal time to speak. Representative Michael Dembro, he's a Democrat in Portland and chair of the committee, he says that he was unaware of a second sheet of opponents who had signed up to testify. So it was a glitch. And there will likely be a great deal more testimony on either side before this bill, House Bill 2787, will eventually make its way through the machinery. It does, in fact, as we said, grant in-state tuition rates for those who do not have the documents that the state would like them to have. Supporters are emphasizing that the educational economic benefits of the legislation are stunningly obvious. Business leaders and others also, in most cases, stand beside them. Opponents see no reason to offer benefits to people who they say are in the country illegally. Well, and that's essentially the nut of it. We've got Lisa Graves on the line right now, so we're going to speak with her before we touch on the rest of the news from around Cascadia. We will try to get to it. If not, look for it on the KBOO website. This is important. We frequently have spoken with Robert Craig with Citizen Action Wisconsin. We've spoken also with other people at the Center for Media and Democracy and PR Watch about the antics of Scott Walker. They are less entertaining all the time. They're really hurting people. The rest of the country is looking to Wisconsin and in many cases shaping policy based on that template. And again, that template very often is derived straight from the ALEC playbook. Good morning, Lisa. I'm very pleased to welcome you back to the KBOO airwaves.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
What is Scott Walker up to? I mean, I find it's very hard to rationalize this legislation. If it's a sort of Tea Party popularity contest, well, then I'm sure he's way out in front. On the other hand, this weakens the state of Wisconsin, and in turn, it weakens the rest of the country. What does he see himself as accomplishing here?
Well, Scott Walker has a number of initiatives that he's put forward, many of which really bear the brand of the American Legislative Exchange Council. And, you know, he's one of the governors that is, in essence, going to be standing in the way of the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, which people often call Obamacare. And that is an effort to expand access by many people, working Americans, to get more affordable health care. And so that's just one of the many things Scott Walker is up to. He's also working on continued efforts to basically redirect funds, including the funds that have been put into reserves by public workers, to redirect that to venture capital efforts toward businesses. And so, you know, I think of his operation as very much of an Alec operation, to try to redirect our tax dollars to the private sector to line the profits, to line the pockets and increase the profits of many of the people who have supported him. I think of him as a politician who represents in some ways the worst of the worst of politicians in terms of greed and putting forward the special interests over the interests of the ordinary people. And Wisconsin has suffered as a result. Wisconsin's economy is one of the last in the nation, and I think that's directly due to the terrible and misguided policies of Scott Walker, many of which replicate the policies of the American Legislative Exchange Council.
Well, there's a quote here that apparently Walker told a billionaire campaign contributor that it was part of his strategy to divide and conquer, make Wisconsin a red state. Well, I'm sure there's many ways of accomplishing that, but this sort of language seems to me destructive of the fabric of society. And I wonder, too, I know that your organization, Center for Media and Democracy, did an amazingly thorough job of kicking a lot of the large corporate funders out from under Alec. And I'm wondering, it makes me wonder where Alec's funding is coming from. Because to a great extent, the corporate funders have fallen by the wayside.
Well, that's right. We have been documenting that on our ALEC Exposed website, ALECEXPOSED.org, which details how these corporate lobbyists have been voting behind closed doors on model legislation to change our rights for bills that have been introduced in every state in the country, including in Oregon. But what we know from our campaign and the work of our allies as well is that we have helped push 42 corporations out of ALEC. That includes General Electric, General Motors, Walmart, Bank of America. Really, if Walmart and Bank of America don't want to be your friend, I think you've got some serious issues. And it's also pushed 71 legislators out of ALEC, six nonprofit corporations, including the Gates Foundation, has been pushed out of ALEC. And then in the last election cycle, more than 100 ALEC legislators are no longer serving in the state houses, either due to their primaries or the general elections or due to retirement. And so this campaign has been successful in many respects, but ALEC continues to chug on, although it has been, I think, weakened. Its main funders, from what we can tell, or its mainstay funders, include the Koch brothers, two of the richest billionaires in the world through both Koch Industries, its role in the organization, as well as other parts of the Koch operation, like David Koch's so-called Americans for Prosperity. It includes some of the biggest tobacco companies in the world. It also is funded by some of the largest oil and coal companies in the world, including Peabody Coal and big oil. Plus, it's got the bankroll of some of the big telecoms and big pharmaceutical firms. And so the drugs, the drug companies, tobacco companies, and the oil polluters, those companies remain steadfastly behind Alec's agenda.
And moving forward, it seems, of course, that Wisconsin is hemorrhaging jobs at the moment. We are out of time, and that is the next topic what we'd like very much to take up with you. We've been speaking with Lisa Graves, the Executive Director at the Center for Media and Democracy, and of course PR Watch, which are the organization which largely led the opposition in the fight to remove corporate funding from ALEC. Thanks again for that, Lisa. We're going to speak now. We're very fortunate this morning to have Travis Gosha joining us to talk about Chris Dorner and racism in America. Good morning, Travis.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the show.
We have very little time, but I would like it. I'd like very much to hear your take on what was turned into a spectacle, complete with the terrifying bogeyman stalking the good white Americans throughout the Southland. What do you see really going on beneath the surface here?
Well, I think many African Americans, have it right that in many ways he's become an unlikely hero. He's been called the Black Rambo, the Black Jason Bourne, sort of a real-life Django Unchained, sort of referring to the Quentin Tarantino film. Many people say that they don't condone his methods, but they support his overall message, the message that racism still exists in America and there's still problems with police brutality and surveillance in communities of color.
I'm always puzzled by this, the intensity and the depth of the subcontinent of racism, and it's that sort of invisible subconscious hand that's always involved when we talk about power, we talk about money, we talk about economic and political disenfranchisement. It astonishes me when not that this happened, but that it hasn't happened before and with greater frequency. It seems the lid is screwed down so tightly on a lot of people who are denied the opportunities with one hand while being promised the opportunities to the other.
There is. Yeah, there's been a pent-up frustration among many Black Americans since 2008. Many of us expected that with the first Black president, many of these social conditions would change, but we still see the same problems with rapid unemployment, mass incarceration. I've seen numbers to suggest that Black Americans have lost 50% of their wealth since 2007. And so in many ways, I think Christopher Dorner has become an unlikely hero because he sort of embodies that frustration among many Black Americans today.
Why do you figure that we're very close to being totally out of time? If you've got any resources that you would like to commend the listeners' attention to, we'd like to know. And we'd also just very briefly to sum up, why do you think President Obama has been so silent on this really critical issue?
For many people, it's been a Faustian bargain. You get the first Black president, but in exchange, you have to sort of go beyond and sort of abandon racial politics. And so I would encourage your listeners, go ahead and Google the story of Joe Jones. He's become the second L.A. police officer to come out and speak against brutality and injustice. I think it starts with one voice, two voices, and then so on and so forth. So please go check out the second manifesto that surfaced.
We'll put a link to that on the KBOO website. I want to thank you very much. We've been speaking with Travis Gosha at Cornell University, and we're very fortunate to have you on the air today. Sorry, we're out of time for today. This has been a Cascadia for Thursday, February 14th, 2013. Rock Bergeron engineered the show today. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Today on Flashpoints, an undocumented response to the State of the Union. We'll have a special report on the culmination of 2 days of actions and civil disobedience in support of migrant rights. Also, Pentagon Papers activist Daniel Ellsberg gives a powerful speech in support of the freeing of military whistleblower Bradley Manning. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano was interrupted at today's Senate immigration hearings as she boasted that the U.S. borders have never been stronger. The protesters who interrupted the hearings on multiple occasions demanded that the administration cut deportations and focus on the human rights of undocumented migrants and immigrants. They interrupted the hearings multiple times, chanting and waving banners against deportations. Interrupting Napolitano, one protester yelled, "You are destroying our community." As others began to chant, "Stop the deportations," a group stood and silently turned their back to the senators with signs on their backs reading, "Human Rights and Immigrant Rights." In one moment, we'll be joined by Cynthia Munoz Ramos, one of the key organizers of these 2 days of actions in support of a moratorium on deportations. But first, some sound from today's hearing in D.C. when a protester interrupted Napolitano mid-speech.
I sit here before you today, not just as DHS secretary, but as someone who has spent the better part of my life career focused on immigration enforcement and policy. I grew up in New Mexico. As the U.S. attorney in Arizona, I supervised the prosecution of more than 6,000 immigration felony cases. As Arizona Attorney General and Governor, I dealt with the surge of illegal immigration in the early part of the century. As Secretary of Homeland Security, I now serve as the Chief Enforcer of Immigration Law and the Chief Administrator of Immigration Services.
Napolitano, that's the problem. You are destroying our communities.
Stop the deportation.